You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 117, Deciphering Death Stranding. This week on the podcast, the PlayStation 2017 Gaming Awards are done, but there's one game we needed to talk about, Kojima Productions' Death Stranding. As the trailer seems like one drug-induced fever dream, we attempt to decipher its meaning. So stick around for that discussion and more, because it's gonna get complicated. That's coming up next on The Impromptu.
Another big couple of days for gaming. December, kind of an odd time, but here we are. Every December, of course, there are the Game Awards, which have, I mean, they started as the Spike Video Game Awards, and Jeff Keighley's basically turned it into the Oscars for video games. And it's a huge star-studded night. Everyone from all the big companies are there. Awards are handed out to all the top games of the year. They take the time to have like an industry icon award and Games for Impact, which is like for games that had some kind of social change during the year. Like last year, they gave it to That Dragon Cancer, which was a game about parents dealing with their child having cancer and unfortunately passing away. Last year, it was incredibly emotional when the dad went up to get the award. He was like crying the whole time talking about his son and how they wanted to share that story with the world. And this year, it was, I always forget the full name of the game, but it's Edith Finch, the PS4 game by Giant Sparrow, where you walk around a house and Edith Finch sort of narrates the story of the Finch family and how they all felt they were cursed and various tragedies befell each of them. And for the most part, it's implied that they kind of made the curse real. Some of them, it was terrible accidents or suicide or other things. But some of them, they actually believed in the curse and feared it so much that it ended up becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy. So at its core, the game is about loss and dealing with loss and trying to have hope and move forward with your life. And I won't spoil the ending or anything like that, but I think it definitely drives that home that you make your own story and you decide what your life will be, and you don't have to follow some idea like a family curse. Like, you don't have to subscribe to those notions. You can just move on and have a new life without that baggage if you choose to. And I just, it was beautifully done. It was probably one of the best couple of hours I've had with a game all year. So I would definitely recommend that people play it if they haven't yet. Beautiful graphics. It's just really well done. A lot of the sequences, when they tell each family member's story, it's always this fantastical sort of like mini game that kind of goes through what happened to them. And all of them are beautifully done, but there are a few that really stand out. You'll know them when you play them. Just a really, really beautiful game. So I'm really glad it won. There were definitely other really cool games. For example, Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. You played as a woman with schizophrenia. So she had to basically avenge her husband's death while she was dealing with these inner demons and hallucinations. And they really tried to portray faithfully what someone dealing with mental illness might go through, trying to carry out any sort of task. obviously it's a historical piece. She's a Viking, and it's a little fantastical, but I think they really did a good job selling that aspect of the game.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, we need more of that, because you wake up, especially now, you tend to wake up every morning and everything seems like doom and gloom, and to have games that that are uplifting or deal with real world things like real mental illness issues is something that I'm a little surprised we don't see more of it already.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of game developers seem to, you know, put out games that are more or less things that we've seen before.
Yeah.
And this is something that I hope becomes a trend, that we see a little more realism in games like that. Especially for people that that actually have these issues, that can have representation in games and go, wow, this character is like, you know, this is me, like me, and what this is like what I'm facing.
Yeah. And a lot of people have spoken out about the game and said that they did a really good job representing it. She actually, the woman who played Senua, actually won Best Performance at the Game Awards, which was really great. And it turned out she'd never actually done any acting before. She was their video editor, and they believed that she could do it, and they were patient with her, and she gave the performance of a lifetime, basically, playing this character. They just did an incredible job, and one of the things that really sold it was the sound design, because obviously people with schizophrenia, they can have auditory hallucinations and hear voices in their head. And so with the sound design, they inserted some of those voices as you're playing, like whispers at the back of your head, like, you will fail. Why are you doing this? Like things like that. And it just creates this really like haunting and realistic interpretation of it, because you're like playing through the game and suddenly like there are these voices or there are things happening that like suddenly things flicker in and out of existence that aren't there.
Yeah, sound design is really underrated, I think, to the general public that doesn't really, they're subconsciously aware of it. They're not actively thinking about the stuff that was intentionally designed, but they just experience that.
Oh yeah, sound design is remarkably important.
But
in
it's
a game.
It's a critical, super important job any game.
I'll give you an example. Like any first person shooter, sound design is how firing a gun feels, because without sound, you're not hearing the bullets go out of the gun. You're not hearing the impact of those bullets in a wall or in a person. You're not hearing any of those things.
And it adds to the realism. I mean, just try playing any game muted.
Yeah.
You'll see, like, you get nothing.
Yeah,
exactly. It doesn't really evoke the same level of visceral emotion that it would with the sound on. So that's super important. Actually, you know, just on the subject of schizophrenia, too, that's something that is surprisingly misunderstood. Even in 2017, there's a lot of myth around it. And
well, there's a lot of myth around all mental illness.
There is. Actually, we just did an episode recently on schizophrenia on Learn Me Something, which people should actually check out, because it you know, we tried to debunk all of the falsehoods about it that a lot of people seem to believe. It doesn't necessarily mean split personality. It's not
that's a completely different thing. That's completely different.
But yeah, it was enlightening to me, because there was a lot, like as we were going through this research and sort of unpacking all of the information about schizophrenia, there are certain things that I didn't really understand about it either. So
yeah, and it's always different for each person. Like that's the thing with mental illness. There's no cookie cutter interpretation. Everybody experiences things differently. And
I imagine that's why some of those things are hard to diagnose too.
Yeah.
Right.
And people can have periods of lucidity and then suddenly it comes back. Like you can be perfectly normal for a day or two and then it just hits you again. Yeah. Like this is the thing I think a lot of people don't understand. They think like, oh, this is something you can just work through, or this is something that's just always there. And it's not always there all the time. Like with depression comes in waves. sometimes you feel totally fine, and other days you feel like you never want to get out of bed. I mean, like people, it's very different all mm-hmm. the time.
Yeah, and not to derail this too much from the conversation about yeah. what's happening at the events too, but just I'll just say on the issue of depression that it's so common that a lot of us, like, you can talk to almost anybody, and even though yeah. they may not have experienced it themselves, like, you know, they probably know somebody yeah. in their lives who has experienced it. I certainly have.
Antidepressants are the number one prescribed drug in North America.
There you go.
Somebody but
I think it's great. I think, you know, it's fantastic that we've gone to a point now with games where games are more than just entertainment. They can be more than entertainment.
Yeah.
They can be about unpacking these complex issues that people deal with.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing a lot of this movement from indie developers. The big studios, they of course roll out Call of Duty 26, stab people with a gun.
There's always a place for those over and over again. Yeah, those will always be around.
Of course, but with the indie studios, they are experimenting with these stories. They are experimenting with showing these things and having conversations about these issues. And I think we've seen it more and more over the past few years. Like, a few years ago, you wouldn't have seen games like this. And now there's like 2, 3, 4 games about this kind of thing every year. And I feel like that number's only going to go up. And it's great because it really shows gaming maturing as an art form, because we're moving past this sort of base, petty, generic, like, oh, you're just killing people, or oh, you're fighting with people, or running around and jumping on things and collecting trinkets and coins. Like, we're moving past that, and we're moving into a space where games are becoming this interactive storytelling where people don't just watch what's happening, they're a part of what's happening. And as a result, you can tell a much more impactful story, because when you're a part of something, when you're interacting with the story, it ends up feeling that much more intense, because you, at some level, feel like you have a degree of control over the outcome of the story.
Yeah.
Whereas with a movie, you're just watching it unfold. There's nothing you can do. But in a game, particularly a game where you have choices and your choices can affect the story, you feel so much more motivated and so much more part of what's unfolding in front of you, because you do have that power. You can affect the story and try and get the outcome that you want. Like David Cage's next game, the new Quantic Dream game, Detroit. It has some caption, but it's that game that's in like a future Detroit, and it's about these androids that act almost completely human. I think it might be Detroit Almost Human or something. Anyways, there's a bunch of different characters. One is, they showed at PlayStation Experience last night. One is part of the police department and acts as a hostage negotiator. And the level that they played through on stage, he had to deal with an android that had gone rogue, killed his owner, and took the owner's daughter hostage on a rooftop. And the choices you made could have easily had a negative outcome where the girl dies. His previous games have always been interesting, though I feel like they've kind of not quite succeeded in execution, like Heavy Rain and Beyond Two Souls. I think due to limitations with the gaming hardware, they weren't quite able to achieve the vision that they had for these kinds of games.
Because those were PS3 era games, right?
Yeah, they were. So finally with PS4, I think they've definitely been able to achieve what they set out to make, which is a game where you can fluidly interact with everything in the world, and everything you do ripples through the story. You have choices constantly and those choices will affect everything that happens after that. So you are effectively playing a role in a movie that's unfolding before you in real time. So the choices you make on that rooftop determine whether that girl lives or dies, or whether the android is destroyed or taken into custody. On stage, he talked the android down, and then just at the last minute, before he freaked out completely, he shot him in the head with a gun he picked up earlier. Android falls off the building. The girl is safe. That's just one of many possible outcomes. So I think they've finally kind of hit on the maximum execution of their vision, just because the processing power of the PS4 allows them to have all of those options and have that detailed play space where you can interact with so many different things that can affect the rest of the story.
And that's something we've touched on a little bit before in previous episodes about, you know, we've talked about how it's interesting how technology can be in many, many situations the sole limiting factor in your creative vision, on executing your creative vision.
Yeah.
And now, like you're saying, we've gotten to this point now where the processing power is so incredible that we can do these cinematic games and we can do all this stuff that just makes the game more immersive, that really impacts your experience on the game. So I think that's a really cool thing. And it feels like we're just scratching the surface, especially things like the PlayStation 4 Pro. And there were actually just Sony just released a few trailers today. Just behind the scenes, there was a video for Shadow of the Colossus,
and
they were talking about all this stuff that they've done in this new version of the game. There's two different modes. You can either play it at 60 frame rates per second, or you can play it at 30 frame rates per second in 4K.
Yeah.
And they're doing something. I think the original resolution that they said in the video was like 1440p. And they do some upscaling thing. But yeah. apparently it looks really, really good.
Yeah, the Pro can't quite hit 4K. The Xbox One X, on the other hand, can.
Yeah.
Though even that is a little behind, but it's definitely ahead of the PS4 Pro. Like, I think in this case, Sony really didn't hit the mark. They released something too soon, and they didn't take the time to really go, okay, we're moving into this 4K era. What can we give that will allow developers to do more and allow players the versatility that they need.
Yeah.
And I think Microsoft absolutely hit that mark. The Xbox One X.
Well, they
One
had a
X,
whole extra year.
Well, they did, yeah.
Right? I mean, like, the PlayStation 4 is not that old, but the Pro is not that old, but had they waited another year, had the Pro come out at the same time that the Xbox One X did, then it probably would be even more competitive.
And not only that, Microsoft is now, they are leveraging the hardware engineering that they have with the Surface team and really iterating on this thing. Like, the Xbox One X, not only is it the most powerful console ever, it's also the smallest console ever. It's smaller than the Xbox One S. And
yeah,
it's
more than double
the power.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if they did a die shrink or something.
They did. And the other key is that the processor and the GPU are cooled by vapor chamber deposition. So the whole thing is this giant vacuum chamber filled with a non-reactive liquid. So it's kind of liquid cooled, but as the heat goes into the vapor chamber, it essentially vaporizes the liquid like it becomes gas. And then that distributes the heat evenly to the outer metal casing. And then that dissipates.
I assume there's still a fan in there though, right?
Yeah, but a very small one, just to kind of keep things moving around. So basically the liquid at the bottom, it gets heated, turns into vapor, goes to the top, the heat goes out of the metal. And then it's kind of like the water cycle. The vapor then sublimates back into liquid, cool liquid, that goes back to the bottom again. And it just keeps repeating in this loop for vastly superior heat exchange. a lot of advanced computing parts are starting to use vapor chambers. There are a few fans you can buy for your CPU that have a vapor chamber. They're still fairly expensive, like $200 or $300, but they are definitely superior in terms of heat exchange. So that is really the secret behind how they were able to make it so small, because this thing, it just perfectly gets rid of the heat. Like, the heat just gets sapped out of it, and then the fan carries it away out of the machine. So with that mechanism in place, they were able to shrink the enclosure dramatically. And as a result, it's, I'm not sure the exact dimensions. I can't remember if it's smaller than the S or only slightly bigger than the S.
Either way, it's roughly the same size as the Pro.
So, I mean, this is a brand new console. It's the same size as their slim version
of the
previous console.
It's pretty incredible.
So, yeah, this is a huge leap. Yeah. And it's entirely thanks to the hardware teams that they have, that have been building surfaces for the past few years.
Yeah.
So all of that expertise has now gone into building Xboxes. And then Sony, the PS4 Pro, it's a PS4 with an additional blade glued onto the top. And internally, the hardware, it's basically the PS4 chip with another PS4 chip attached to it, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not a new chip. It's not a new chipset. It's still the same architecture.
Yeah, because they were trying to keep the cost down to that thing.
Yeah, right? But then the Xbox One X isn't that much more expensive because they were targeting a specific price point. So, I mean, I think for Sony, we are definitely going to see a PS4 or a PS5, like a PS4 Pro Plus or a PS5 next year. I think they can't just keep the Pro. They're not competitive with Microsoft at this point, mm-hmm. and they just need to leap ahead. They need to have a new chipset. They need to have 4K Blu-ray in there.
Yeah, I think if I was Sony, I think 2018, my lineup looks like this. PS4 Slim, gone. PS4 Pro, the default, the new entry level.
Yep.
And PS5 or PS4 Pro Plus, whatever they want to call it.
Yeah.
That is the next level system. But the Slim has to go away.
Yeah. They need to leap ahead of Microsoft, and they need to do it sooner than later because Microsoft does stand to overtake them, especially because of what they're doing in the game space. Because Sony is sitting there going, oh, we're on top. We're not going to let cross-platform multiplayer happen. And over here, you've got Microsoft with their vastly superior hardware going, oh, yeah, if you buy a game on Xbox, you can play it on Windows. Oh, and if you buy it on Windows, you can play it on Xbox, and you can stream it between each other.
It's a good value proposition, but then you still have the issue when it comes down to the consumer making a decision on which platform they want. You still have the issue of game exclusivity, where there are certain games where it's like Sony still feels like they have the edge there.
They do.
Right.
But that will only last for so long, because as Xbox becomes more and more attractive and as Microsoft starts throwing money at developers, that lead is going to vanish.
Right. Now, we're going to be talking about, because we're going to have to go back to the game conference and talk about Kojima's Death Stranding trailer.
Yes.
The new trailer.
Speaking of exclusives.
Which confused me a lot. But however, on that topic of Kojima games, do you know if have any of the Metal Gear Solid games, or like the newest one, Phantom Pain, or Death Stranding, is that coming to the Xbox, or are those always going to be Sony exclusives?
Okay.
What's going on with that?
So Phantom Pain is on Xbox One because the Metal Gear franchise is not owned by Kojima. It's owned by Konami, the evil, awful Konami, whose only business now is making slot machines in Japan and re-releasing games.
Well, they did it to themselves, but anyway.
Yeah. So anyways, Kojima's on his own now, and Death Stranding is his new IP, which is exclusive to Sony. It will only be on the PS4 and best playable on the PS4 Pro, obviously. It's using the Decima engine, which was built by Guerrilla Games for Horizon Zero Dawn, though it seems that Kojima has vastly upgraded the engine, because Death Stranding in the latest trailer looks far superior to Horizon in terms of just detailing on character models, lighting, weather effects, like it's all amped up. So they've obviously done some additional work on the engine since the build that Gorilla used for Horizon. So it's looking a lot better.
Okay, so but you really want a PlayStation then for that game?
Yeah, yeah. Like if that's stuff.
Like I would love an Xbox, but like I've bought so many games on the PS4. It's like changing over now is going to be really expensive for me.
It is. Like this is the thing. Obviously, like if you're entrenched in the ecosystem, if you have a ton of games, yeah, of course you're going to want to stay. Just looking at the market in a larger sense, I think Sony is definitely in trouble here because all they have at this point is exclusive games. On paper, their hardware is nowhere near as good. The performance is nowhere near as good. They don't have 4K Blu-ray support. So if you want to watch 4K movies, you can't do that with a PS4 Pro. You have to get a 4K Blu-ray player. It's not integrated. So they've lost that advantage because the PS3, famously, it was the only console that had a Blu-ray player. So if you wanted to watch really high-quality 1080p movies, that was the console to get because you also were getting a Blu-ray player. And a lot of people used it to watch movies.
So if you had to, as a gift, buy someone a game console and you were deciding between a PS4 Pro and an Xbox One X, they assume the person you're buying the gift for doesn't own any games whatsoever. Do you choose the Xbox One X over the Sony?
I would say it depends. And my trick answer would be get them a Nintendo Switch. But if the choice is one of the two at this point, just on a flat comparison, I would say the Xbox One X. Because in terms of exclusive games, there aren't a ton. At this point, a lot of the games are on Xbox as well.
Mm-hmm. So like, the games library is pretty good then.
Yeah, like all of the cross-platform titles, anything that's on PS4 is also on Xbox.
Right.
And so far, the support for Xbox One X enhancement has been vastly superior to PS4 Pro. Like they are getting title updates that add the 4K support, that add additional visuals, and so on and so forth. PS4 Pro has been a lot murkier. Like a lot of top games haven't updated at all, or they have, and it's unclear exactly what the level of support is. Like some of these games, they say they've updated, but really they've bumped the resolution a little bit and they haven't really enhanced the visuals at all. Or they don't have HDR support, or like a bunch of other things. So I'd say PS4 Pro has been really spotty for that, whereas Xbox One X, the games have been a lot more consistent in supporting the new hardware, and the Xbox One X does a lot of work to enhance existing games anyways, though obviously it's not as dramatic as if support is added, but there definitely are performance bumps just by playing a regular game on the X. Like, somebody noticed that loading times were basically cut in half, even on unoptimized games.
Interesting.
So, I mean, you're definitely getting obvious benefits just by playing on the X. God, I keep making that mistake. Someone in the Microsoft store made that mistake too. She's like, yeah, the Xbox One 10. I mean, the X. I mean, the iPhone 10. I mean, the iPhone X. I don't know anymore.
Yeah, Microsoft kind of painted themselves into a corner with the naming convention of that product. But anyways, let's loop back to the conference and Kojima's new Death Stranding trailer. I watched it today,
yes. And
I'm just sitting there thinking, what drugs were they on when they made this? It makes no sense.
Oh.
There's all sorts of... there's stuff going on that reminds me of the X-Files and the black alien goo. There are people flying through the air for no apparent reason. I mean, there's obviously a reason, but I don't understand it. They zoom in on Norman Reedus's face and the camera, like there's this shot where it goes inside his mouth and there's like a baby's face. Like it, I like, this is one giant acid trip. Like what is happening?
Please
guide us through this.
Okay. So I'm not going to pretend I completely 100% understand what's going on, But here are some insights. So I think it's pretty obvious at this point that the game involves two different dimensions or worlds or universes or something. And the babies are somehow a link between those dimensions. So when the big thing ate that guy and its head blew up and there was that light, he ended up in the other dimension, which was upside down and underwater. But then, like, he was floating and naked, but then his body in the other world was still there in the spot that it was in the first dimension. And then it did the view into his esophagus, and there was the baby that he was holding in that canister in the primary dimension, and it snapped him back to the original dimension, because then he woke up in the original place. So somehow these babies act as a tether or a strand, if you will, that allows...
That's a fascinating theory.
...allows passage or travel between these two worlds. And then there are these invisible creatures that I think are somehow out of phase that exist in both places at the same time or something. And they're seemingly drawn to people somehow, or drawn to life or life force, and they eat it. Like, they take living people and they consume them somehow.
So in summation, Kojima's storytelling is so wonderfully sophisticated that our mere mortal puny brains, most of us won't be able to understand or comprehend it.
Well, I think you will understand it once you're playing it. Obviously, these trailers are just like complete mindfucks.
Yeah, but I think part of it, obviously, the trailer, it's clear to me that the trailers are designed in such a way to get you to ask these questions.
Yes.
And to be just drawn into it and interested and excited to get it.
Yeah.
Right? And so, I think it's good because you don't want to explain what it's about and then, like, not be surprised when you actually play it.
So many trailers just spoil the game story, whereas these, they kind of hint at things and you can kind of start to extrapolate what's going on. But for the most part, you're not entirely sure. So I think primarily this game is about some kind of accident that leads to an apocalyptic scenario. Something that maybe breaches the time-space continuum and opens this other dimension where death is a physical force of some kind, personified by these creatures or the floating beings that we see in the trailers. And somehow death, or the concept of death, has changed, and suddenly you can't die anymore, or if you do, it's really bad. And then these babies, I think, are genetically constructed. I don't think they're natural. And so they're like engineered to be these links between the two dimensions. It's possible that these death beings are actually aliens of some kind, and the babies are genetically engineered hybrids. So they're part human and part whatever these things are. And they act as kind of a secret weapon or a tool to keep humanity surviving in this new reality somehow.
I thought it said something in the trailer about, didn't it talk about the creation of life or something like that?
The
beginning of time or whatever?
Yeah, so he mentioned an explosion that created the universe and then an explosion that led to life.
So obviously this is all linked to, like, these broad, you know, concepts of life and death and creation and
destruction
and then he says all that sort of stuff.
And then there was another explosion. So implying there was some kind of incident and that something has happened to the world.
Yeah. And I wonder what the catalyst was. We'll have to, I guess, play the game and find out.
Yeah. Obviously their technology is more advanced, so it's a future timeline. Maybe it was CERN, or they were experimenting with a particle accelerator and something exploded and it ripped a hole in the universe. Could be something like that. And then the other thing, there are some details that hint at gameplay. So I think this game won't have a traditional HUD. If you watch the trailer, all of the characters have these glowing wristbands and the color changes depending on how close they are to death. So the character that stabs himself...
Didn't catch that. I'm going to have to watch this trailer a couple times.
So the character that stabs himself as he's floating into the thing's mouth, his wristband starts off as blue. As he starts stabbing himself, it turns orange, then yellow, then red. So I think these wristbands are actually the health indicator in the game. There's no health bar on the screen.
That's actually really clever because then you actually get to see more of what's happening on screen without all that clutter of a HUD. That's really clever.
Yeah. Dead Space used something similar.
I never played
on
it.
The back of the rig was your health meter.
Okay. All right.
So it was a physical object in the game. So this seems to be something similar.
That's kind of cool.
And then the robotic reader that could detect the creatures, that I think is your crosshair or gaming reticle pointer. Like, it again, a physical object that exists in the world of the game that is a stand-in for a traditional interface item. So I think that robotic device will actually act as your cursor in the game.
This game looks like something out of someone's nightmare.
It's interesting because originally, Kojima's next game was supposed to be Silent Hills with Guillermo del Toro for Konami. But then, of course, he was kicked out of Konami because they're awful. But their loss is our gain. So really, I think what we're getting is some kind of bizarre mashup between Metal Gear and Silent Hill and probably some H.P. Lovecraft thrown in there because these things are like some kind of unknowable nether force from beyond space or whatever the hell they are.
Yeah.
Because
he's influenced by a lot of stuff like that, right? Like influenced by a lot of storytelling from the Western world. Like you mentioned H.P. Lovecraft and all sorts of stuff like that. So he's pulling all these different influences and trying to create something original.
Yeah, and with these creatures and like the death stuff, I'd say there's also some influence from Evangelion as well. There definitely seems to be some of that in there. Maybe some Akira.
I believe it's pronounced Evangelion, but small nitpick.
Yeah.
I won't even go into that, but that's another mind fuck. Because,
exactly.
When I watched that anime series, not the movies, but the anime series the first time, by the
ending?
Yeah, by the time I got to the end, I was like, I don't think I understood any of this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was a little convoluted. Let's hope Death Stranding is not that convoluted.
Yeah, I think he's also inspired by a Japanese anime artist who primarily makes horror, Junji Ito, who you might be familiar with or might not. He did a series about a town obsessed with spirals, and that was really freaking creepy. He also did a short story about holes in a mountain, and people went into them and became horrific spaghetti monsters at the other end.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Anyways, it seems like there's some inspiration from his stuff in there too. We know that Kojima admires him or is friends with him. So it stands to reason that some of that is thrown in there as well. Yeah. So, I mean, this game is probably going to be a mashup of horror and action and cinematic storytelling and innovative new gameplay design with a freaky ass story that might leave you wondering what the hell happened. But I think in the end, it'll ultimately make sense because even as freaky as these trailers are, some meaning is sort of starting to emerge from them, as I outlined before. Like, I think things are being hinted at, and there seem to be like common elements in every trailer, like the babies and the oil, and like all of these things are common elements throughout each of the trailers. So I think anything that's in all of the trailers will be a part of the actual game. And this trailer was the one that felt most like they were showing what the real game looks like.
But a lot of people complained that this was just one giant big cutscene without any actual gameplay. What do you say to that?
I think it was gameplay of some kind. I think it was an in-game cutscene. At least some of it was. Like I said, I think this game doesn't have a HUD. So
maybe that's why a lot of people were criticizing, because they don't really, they don't, it's sort of not traditional in that way.
Yeah. I mean, if the game has zero HUD and you have to rely on objects that the character is wearing to identify what the current state of the game is,
attention.
Then any shot of the game is going to look like a cutscene because there's no interface.
Right. I mean, look, it's a game trailer.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be cinematic.
And we're pretty far
It isn't a game walkthrough. That's not what it is.
Yeah, and we're pretty far from the game actually coming out. Like, I think we'll maybe see, like, actual gameplay at E3 next year, perhaps.
So it's not is the full game coming out towards the end of 2018? It's like a full year away?
He claimed it would be out before the year that Akira takes place in, which is 2019. So that could mean winter 2018. But I think we'll get a better idea of that around E3. If he is at E3 and he does show off gameplay, I think it's likely that it'll be out at the end of the year, especially, obviously, if he announces a release date. But I think it's just as likely that the game will slip into 2019 to make sure that they get it right. At some point in the next 2 years, we will know a lot more about it than we do now. And we will have seen actual gameplay. And we might have a release date.
Is there anything else from the game conference that you want to talk? There's way too much to really cover.
Yeah, there was quite a bit. From Software teased a new game. It's unclear if it's Bloodborne 2 or something completely new. They're bringing back Soul Calibur. Soul Calibur 6 will be out next year. Yeah, I think that was really the big stuff. Oh, and Campo Santo, the developers of Firewatch, they're making a new game that will come out in 2019 set in Egypt. And it looks as if they are upping their game in terms of gameplay. Instead of talking to an NPC over a radio, you're now going to be directly interacting with an NPC. The game seems to be about these two women that are hunting treasure in the Valley of the Kings in Egypt in the 20s or 30s. And so it looks like a much more direct interaction with another character. It's more than likely that they'll be seeking to innovate that type of gameplay, because they certainly innovated in terms of dialogue with Firewatch. Having to respond to another character, only having a limited window in which to do so, the fact that the choice you make actually affects your relationship with the other character, that kind of thing. I think that'll all carry over, but obviously they're definitely stepping up their game, which is why it's going to take 2 years to release it. They've probably already been working on it for at least a year, probably after they finished Firewatch, to be honest. That's looking really cool. I look forward to that for sure. It's called In the Valley of Kings. And yeah, it'll be out 2019. That's exciting.
Just to wrap, I think 2018, I mean, I really sincerely hope that Sony has a new console for us, because come October 2018, it will be 2 years since the release of the PS4 Pro. Do I have that right? So they've got to have something to be competitive. So
yeah,
we can hope. And the earliest we'll hear anything, if it does exist, I suppose, will be
E3.
What, E3, right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. That's usually when the big announcements happen. So yeah, if they are planning a new console, I would expect it in winter 2018 and they announce it at E3, something like that. Because then it'll be two years since the Pro came out, and then the Pro can kind of gracefully become the entry level, and then they've got this brand new console that's way more powerful and has 4K Blu-ray and the latest Wi-Fi and whatever else they want to cram in there. And then they'll have a competitive edge over Microsoft, or at least be on par with Microsoft, which is where they're lacking at this point. Like, yeah, they basically have to jump up to where Microsoft is or surpass them in some way. Hopefully Mark Cerny has been working on a new chipset for PlayStation and we get to see that next year. Because yeah, the Pro is just such a mixed bag at this point.
Yeah, and my understanding is that the PS4 Pro doesn't support 802.11ac. Nope. I was just looking it up. So they need to get that in the next version for sure.
The Xbox One X, after all, full modern networking stack. I think they even have Bluetooth 5 in there.
And of course, it goes without saying, I know we've beaten a dead horse before on this topic, but they need a new DualShock version.
Yeah.
A new DualShock with considerably better battery life and Bluetooth LE 5.
Yeah.
Minimum.
Would be nice, yeah. We shall see.
You've been listening to the Impromptu One Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment that makes us feel good, as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there, and wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.